Hello listeners, welcome back to my award-winning podcast, The Story Explorer. Picture me inside a small dyke house in the Netherlands. Outside are traditional wooden shutters, painted carefully by my friend herself. Inside there are books everywhere I look, from floor to ceiling. The shelves are double stacked. I recognize many from the years we spent together selling them at the Bijenkorf, the big department store where we first became colleagues, then book friends. Seeing the covers jogs my memory, and suddenly the feelings of those books, evoked in me all those years ago, return to my body. I had heard of this house and all the books so often, but I had never been inside it myself. Finally, the next time I speak to her from Joburg, I will be able to picture her, her house, and her books. Somehow my body finds ease in that knowledge. Her hubby makes us coffee, and we sit around the coffee table with a plate of my favorite Dutch almond cookies. I feel cared for that she got them fresh from the bakery for me. Of course, we talk about books. I mention that I think it's special that we agree on about 90% of the books we read. But my friend laughs out loud and says she believes it is only about 40%. I'm surprised. Yet, the first book we immediately disagree on actually gives her the floor when I say I didn't like the movie and book Hamlet by Maggie O'Farrell. She loved it. I hated it. I can picture a typical conversation about this dilemma anywhere in the world going like this. One person would say, "I loved Hamlet, such a great story about how she was left alone." And there's someone like me who would say, "I absolutely hated it, not literature, not even a good story." Then, to soften the mood, these two people would look into each other's eyes and probably raise a glass of nice Merlot, and then they would say, "Let's agree to disagree." Doesn't that happen often? But I want to stop it right there, in its tracks, because I have this strong internal resistance against this saying. It gives us a way out of an argument while leaving both sides frustrated. I believe we should no longer say "let's agree to disagree," but instead we should ask each other, "Okay, tell me, what exactly did you love or hate about that book?" My book friend and I have years of book talk experience. Because of that, we have discovered a way to not stop at the hate and love discussion. Instead, we ask each other, "What did you love about this story?" My friend told me she was taken by the storyline of the woman who's left behind when a personal tragedy hits home. Often, the man then can disappear, escape in his rhythm of work and the world outside, while the woman is left home alone, amidst the emptiness left by the loss. She was deeply touched by the boy who tricks death into taking him and not his sick sister. This made her read the book as a magical realism story. It is one of her favorite genres. I then said that for me, especially the trick with death, defied all logic. I hadn't picked it up as a magical realism setting. And portraying Shakespeare as a coward who runs away from home and escapes in his work felt to me like a modern trick to make the woman a heroine, while factually there is very little to support that storyline. And what we know of Shakespeare himself and his legacy, to me, makes him a hero. So why would someone want to challenge that? In this conversation, we uncovered the different lenses each of us used to look at the same story. This is why our responses differed. I believe that because we both investigated our own longings or needs for a good story, we ended up not disagreeing with each other, but understanding why the same story evoked a different response in us as readers. This is why it matters to talk about the books we read together. Do you see here now how, instead of looking at your fellow story reader as wrong and weird, you now see something wonderful, characteristic about each of you as a reader? In that unique dijkhuis in the Netherlands, we actually came to know each other a bit better via a conversation about a story. The conversation highlighted the role of us as reader and somewhat pushing the story to the background. I'd like to inspire all of you to do more of this. So today I am going to share with you what happened in me, in my mind and in my body, while I read The Correspondent by Virginia Evans. This book sits in a very special category for me. It joins the ranks with Stoner by John Williams, and more recently one of my favorites, Watching Over Her by Jean-Baptiste Andrea. I wonder, what is it that makes these kinds of books special? Besides being crafted, imagined stories, they capture you from beginning till end. I mean capture in the literal sense, like a fish on a hook. You can't let go. You do not want to stop reading, so you hardly breathe, and once you finish, you feel regret because the experience is over. For me, those stories are the best, one of a kind. I'd like to give you a reading response account of what happened in me when I read the book. I'll give you insight into what my mind does while reading it. I'll tell you what moved me and what my mind did in response to that. I believe that's what gets often overlooked. I mean, the reader's response. And that is actually what a writer is, in essence, after. To create a movement in the body, or to make the reader think. Many writers have told me that phrase, and I think it's kind of true. For those of you who know a bit about literature and philosophy, this practice is deeply inspired by Roland Barthes' essay, The Death of the Author, wherein he highlights the role of the reader. It's also inspired by phenomenology, especially the idea by philosophers like Husserl and Heidegger of stopping to notice and to describe lived experience. This is just roughly giving you a reference point. So I pick up the book and start reading it again. It starts with a quote from Joan Didion, On the Morning After the 60s, from the White Album. I read, What I have made for myself is personal, but is not exactly peace. Most of us live less theatrically, but remain the survivors of a peculiar and inward time. I don't understand this quote. I have not read Joan Didion. I know vaguely who she is, American, intellectual, intimidating even. The preface introduces me to Sybil van Antwerp. That sounds Dutch or Belgium to me. She drinks Irish breakfast tea. Why Irish breakfast tea? Is that a thing in America? She scoots the chair. Scoots. Interesting word. Then I notice something else. It's always a she, never I. It is the correspondence that is her manner of living. She writes to her brother in France. She writes, I started the day it arrived. Of course I think the letters are her I. Already then I notice something strange. I'm only in for a few pages, and as you all by now know that I read with a pencil in my hand, so I can underline, but this time I read and resist the urge to underline. I hesitate. I am aware of this feeling. I surrender to it, put away my pencil, and I read on. The correspondent consists entirely of letters. My eye reads the first letter, and I am immediately moved. I think, why am I moved about this person? She's quite polite. Felix, my dear brother, thank you. The second letter also. Dear Mr. Lubeck, thank you for... On page 6 I read, I found myself wondering about the balance of facts and fiction with the matter of the tree bark. On page 7, I am not a writer. On page 8 and 9, she shares her fear of going blind, her nightmares. She told Joan Didion she is going blind. I think this is funny. Why do I think this is funny? She shares she wrecked the car. I read page 15 and I write in my notebook. Why do I like it so much already? This is strange. I think it is also the mutual respect that is shown in all the letters. The politeness, the care for each other, the honesty. There are many characters. Felix, Harry, Fiona, Rosalie. It's not a single story. My brain needs to think who is writing to whom all the time. Almost page after page, I'm reminded of the work my mind had to do in Italo Calvino's book, If on a Winter's Night, a Traveller. My mind is engaged. It has a mystery. It reads as a murder mystery. What has happened? That I do not know of yet. The main question becomes, what has happened in the past to Sybil van Antwerp? Who is the person who writes her these creepy letters and signs with the letters DM? My mind keeps on being intrigued. What happened? Who writes this? What is talked about? Again, I am engaged. I am doing a puzzle. I notice a passage that heightens awareness in me. It's on page 25 and 26. It's actually in a letter to Joan Didion. I write it in my notebook. There are, by definition, four seasons that repeat in measured pattern year after year. As there is no such rhythm in a human life, I have to think that when it comes to seasons, we all get one round. We are born and grow through childhood in spring. We live those glorious, lively, interesting years of our 20s, 30s, 40s in summer. We settle into ourselves in autumn, that cool but not yet cold time, rich and aromatic. And in winter we age, brutally, and die. One turn of the season per person, unless it's cut short, like it was for Gil and like it was for Quintana Roo. I suppose on this schedule we'd say, your John had made it to fall. My mother died in her summer. I notice I am swallowing, and I think, yes, we don't all get four seasons. I read on and think more, why does this book work? What are the ingredients for loving this book? For one, there's the puzzle. You have to think constantly who writes here. And you think what happened in the past. There are two big things that are revealed later. Two, I love the main character. The main character becomes my heroine. Why? What in her makes me love her? Well, she is audacious. She is not only funny, she instills in me that kind of admiration for a person that old in her situation, going blind, still going strong, and going after the stuff she likes. She is not complaining, quite the opposite. Then, for three, there are the things she likes that I like. Reading, studying, following courses at university, gardening, and engaging with others via letter writing. In this book, Sybil writes to Kazuo Ishiguro. I feel the urge to write her words back to Virginia Evans here, and suddenly my mind goes, I want to be as audacious as Sybil van Antwerp was here. I'll write Virginia Evans a letter using this brilliant passage from her own book. I hope she might smile when she ever reads it one day. Dear Virginia Evans, the primary subject for this correspondence is the matter of your novel, The Correspondent, which was recommended to me by a trusted source. I only finished it last night. It reminded me somewhat of a certain kind of modern literary novel we see often nowadays, like Julian Barnes' The Departures, and from the Netherlands, Anna Enquist's last book, Het einde van Erna Enkersmit. Both stories are from very established literary writers. They are both novels about an elderly famous writer whose bodies are beginning to fail them. I'm not going to write them a letter though, as I have this particular thing of fearing disapproval, and delivering criticism often gives that reaction in others. So I'm taking up the pen and write you as I admire your novel above theirs. I thought you might like to hear this. All these books share certain themes which are universal to the human experience, and in recent case, it is often aging and living with illnesses. It makes me wonder why so many established writers in the last phase of life begin to write about their aging bodies, often using parts of fiction. But the main storyline is obviously so close to the writer's position that for me as a reader, I just read the writer's life into this. I wonder if they ask their publisher, please, can you publish just one more novel? Perhaps writers feel an urgency in that final phase of life, one last fragile attempt to shape experience into a story. The publisher, being loyal to their established clients, may also be thinking of securing future post-mortem income for the collected works. In all of this, I'm reminded of Heidegger's idea that a work of art needs to be worked at, wrestled with, into becoming. Lately, I have not really seen that kind of effort in novels by old established writers about their so-called last book. But I ought to get to the point, because, and then, there is your book, also about an aging person. Yet you yourself are not old, and more important, it seems to me as if you did not write about yourself. You wrote about someone else. And that to me is the best. I'm writing to tell you what I've thought about your book. The story is original, and it took me at least half the book to really sort out what had happened in the past. I very much liked the audacity of your main character. I also marveled at the very direct way in which the story is narrated, and I have spent a bit of time pondering this. You do very well with telling a story from multiple perspectives. Of course, the letter writing setup works really well for this. I love what letter writing reveals about a person. Do you think we could become letter writers again? Or do you think it is too late for that? Indeed, I've thought your book is very clever, and there were funny parts, and you moved me to tears a few times. You are a very good storyteller, and your writing is exquisite, which of course you know, as you have been nominated a few times now. I hope you win a few big ones, as I believe your kind of story writing is becoming rare in our world. We could need a bit more of telling the story about someone else, I think. If you have any advice for a middle-aged, aspiring writer, please pass it along. How does one imagine the life of another? I often hit a wall when I start that process, and when I start to write about myself, I find it all way too pathetic to finish. It would be lovely if you could offer me and the world something to go by. I look forward to your next story, and it is with warm regards I write, Christy Sa, the Story Explorer. This is me responding to a text. This I call creative reading. I align myself with what the writer is doing and I start to do something similar in my mind. It's creativity, engaging with the text. I also found myself responding in a similar way when I read the following passage. It's a letter from Sybil to the treasurer of the Garden Committee because she is overthrown. Sybil writes, "My guest likes to fish in the evening before dinner, and frankly, I enjoy his company far more than I enjoy our meetings, which have become overrun with women more interested in chattering on about their bygone husbands, arthritic joints, and bowel movements, and munching on cakes and cookies than information about gardening." Listener, I smile. Can you guess why? I still wonder why I like this book so much. I think of the book that made a stamp on me when I was a teenager, Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre became a kind of role model for me. She escaped an environment that was smothering her. A quote from Toni Morrison comes to mind. If you cannot find the book you want to read, you need to write that book yourself. With this quote in mind, I have made many an attempt to imagine to write a story of my own. And in that vision, I often thought about an elderly woman that I could admire. Maybe I don't need to write that book anymore. As here she is, an elderly female heroine. I don't know, I just loved it. So I'm curious, did you love the book too? Could you tell me why? Or if you didn't, what do you need to find in a story to love it? Would you write me an actual letter? I'd really love to hear from you. For now, thank you for listening. And remember, reading is a way to enrich your life.